Hello, listeners. Welcome to the latest episode of Private Equity Talks. I'm Sylvie Sicardi, reporter at The Drawdown. And in this episode, we'll be discussing the latest trends in private asset tokenization. I'm joined by three experts in the field, Jack Chong, Stephen Lightstone, and Miles Milston. Hi, everyone. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having us.
I'm very glad that you're all here today. Before we begin, can I get a brief introduction from each of you in relation to your current role and the perspective you're bringing to the table today on digital assets? Can we start with Jack, please, in no particular order?
Sure. So, hey, everyone. My name is Jack. I'm an entrepreneur resident at YStar Capital, which is a digital asset venture capital fund. I'm based in New York. I come from a background at the intersection of enterprise software and capital markets. Prior to doing what I'm doing now, I was building a company in the asset tokenization space, particularly in sustainable finance, bond issuance on the blockchain. Currently, I'm building a new company specifically focusing on how can we bridge the traditional buy side adoption, so asset managers, hedge fund adoption of tokenization, which in my opinion is the bottleneck of our industry.
Thank you. How about Stephen? Do you want to go next?
Thanks, Sylvia. So I'm a regulatory partner in the London investment management team of Morgan Lewis, which is a global law firm headquartered in the US. And I advise on all types of regulatory matters for all types of financial institutions, including asset managers, banks, and fintechs. And I have a particular focus on fintech and crypto assets.
Thank you. And last but not least, Miles.
Hi, everyone. I'm Miles. I'm CEO and co-founder of a company called Globacap. We are a fintech based in the UK, which has developed software that has automated and digitized private markets workflow from private placement through all of the ongoing securities register management through to settlement of secondary liquidity transactions. Prior to starting Globacap in 2017, I had a career in various parts of banking, from Macquarie Bank, Morgan Stanley, et cetera, through structured derivatives, equity quantitative research, and originally started in technology. So I've got an intersection of both technology and deep level capital markets.
Great start. Thank you all for joining me today. I want to kick things off by demystifying some terms. I think some listeners, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about with tokenization. But others might not ever have heard of it before. Miles, I don't know if you're able to give a brief overview of what we mean by tokenization and also blockchain.
Sure. So blockchain is it's really just a mechanism of recording data, like a database, but done in a new format that allows for a lot of nifty functionality at the same time. So if you look at a traditional database, it's really just like a ledger, a simple list that you can put on, really simplifying, but you can record data like you would in a spreadsheet, and that's in a database at the back end that you can access in some way. And that's in a single place, right, on a single server. Whereas with blockchain, it is a mechanism that allows that database, if you like, to be spread across many different servers, many different participants, and done in such a way where all of those different participants can interact with each other and interact with that data in a format where they're not relying on any one individual participant. So in other words, if you have a group of participants in a particular market, and you know, in the traditional format, you would need one of those entities to be the central point that everyone connects to and records transactions and so on. Now you can actually have no single defined central entity, but you can actually have all different parties that are in that group interacting in the same way in a trusted format together. And really the mechanism or the term tokenization is the process of creating that data or representing some form of data, could be an asset, could be something else, in that format, whereby there are different pieces of functionality that can be built over the top of that in that distributed database.
Okay, thank you. In that case, what does that technology allow us to do in private markets? I don't know, yep. Jack, you want to chip in there?
Sure, yeah. So in this, I would like to add, there are some additional features that are very unique to blockchain. So apart from the fact that there's a decentralized consensus mechanism, which it might not be essential to a blockchain, right? There are private blockchains which are that decentralized. But there's also an element of what's called composability. So particularly when we look at blockchain with smart contracts capability. So to pick a particular example, for example, public Ethereum blockchain, where there are developers that can use smart contract coding language such as Solidity to write basically computer programs that self-execute on the blockchain itself. And listeners might have heard of the term decentralized finance, DeFi. Smart contracts is basically the backbone that enabled a lot of DeFi applications, from borrowing to lending to derivatives to different types of trading applications. And so applying it to private markets, I think there is a case to be made, which is that smart contracts will be able to do what traditional settlement mechanisms would do, or even, you know, when it comes to tokenizing the underlying private asset, the token themselves can sort of reveal some data of the underlying holdings or the sort of underlying performance of the private asset data. And that could be a sort of more streamlined data value chain so that the end investors can track and monitor the performance of the private asset easier than it is in the current world.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so that's a good introduction to tokenization and what it means, what it could mean for private markets. I know that recently, literally a few days ago, the FCA collaborated with the Monetary Authority of Singapore's Project Guardian with other regulators to consider the use cases of fund and asset tokenization. So clearly it's on the agenda for the regulator in the UK. I wonder if, Stephen, you could give us an overview of how the FCA defines tokenization at the moment within its regulatory framework.
Thanks, Sylvia. So that's correct. There definitely is a focus currently on crypto assets and innovation. Currently, the FCA understands fund tokenization to mean the ability to issue a fund's rights of participation as digital tokens, usually by distributed ledger. As to the current UK regulatory treatment of tokenized fund interest, regulation in the UK is technology neutral, and so tokenized interest should generally be treated from a regulatory perspective the same as traditional fund interest. And the FCA currently divides crypto assets into security tokens, which are regulated crypto assets qualifying as specified investments like shares and bonds, and are subject to the existing UK regulatory framework for specified investments. E-money tokens, which are regulated crypto assets qualifying as electronic money and are subject to existing electronic money regulations, and unregulated tokens, which are crypto assets and are neither security tokens nor e-money tokens, include cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin and Ether. And tokenized fund interests would fall into the category of security tokens if they provide rights and obligations akin to traditional interests in funds, and so would fall within the existing UK regulatory regime for fund interests.
Okay, thank you. So that's all very technical. But would you say, so with that summary, that we have developed the regulation that is necessary to allow for the tokenization of funds, or have we still got a way to go there, would you say, in your opinion?
So the FCA is looking at how the current regime facilitates tokenized fund interest, which I'll get on to shortly, but it does seem like the current regime is sufficient for tokenized fund interests, as that they should just be treated like any other fund interest from a regulatory perspective. But there may be some operational issues that the regulator may need to focus on.
Okay, that's a good overview of that then. So then, if I were a GP and I heard all this and I was thinking, oh, okay, the regulation is all there, we can start creating digital assets in our firm. Why do you think mid-market GPs should consider tokenizing their assets in the first place? I don't know, Jack, if you have any opinions on that.
So as we've seen with the current fund tokenization projects that are currently live, the names such as Hamilton Lane, KKR, these asset managers, these GPs, they have tokenized a portion of the fund and distributed the fund shares via sort of different fintech or technology platforms, such as Securitize. I think for middle market GP to take note of this will be that it is possible to tokenize the fund unit and reach a pocket or investor audience which otherwise might have been difficult to reach. So for example, these could be younger, mass affluent, qualified or accredited investors, which otherwise might not, you know, the younger generation, to be frank, do not really rely on relationships with the wealth advisors. They prefer to do self-direct investments, or they prefer to work with technology platforms, which could be a challenge for mid-market GPs to reach that LP audience. So that could be an interesting angle.
Mm-hmm. And Miles, do you think that this trend might become more prevalent in Europe? Because I know that tokenization is more popular or more prevalent, let's say, in the US. Do you think there's room for growth here as well?
Yeah, so to answer that question, I'd like to just take a quick step back just look at the entire journey of digitization versus tokenization. Because everything that we've described so far in this discussion can actually just be done without tokenization, but pure digitization. And so where do we draw the line there? If we look at public markets, first of all, public markets are largely digitized. There can be some elements that could be more efficient, but ultimately they are digital end to end. Private markets, on the other hand, are not. And where there are central entities in public markets that result in efficient transactions, such as central securities depositories, clearing counterparties, settlement agents, et cetera, those don't exist in private markets. And that's why we have very slow, cumbersome, and burdensome processes in private markets. And so what that friction creates is more difficult access and much more difficult secondary liquidity, which results in a liquidity premium on the, or rather an additional risk for investors up front. And that filters out a lot of investors. You know, coming into private equity, there aren't that many investors, particularly the younger generation, who can say that they're happy to have their assets tied up for 7-12 years for the life cycle of a fund. So that ability to access secondary liquidity throughout the life of the fund, if those GPs are trying to attract a younger audience, that's really important. And so if we look at what that means ultimately, there's also something important to consider, which is if you look at the tokenization to date, you know, that's one mechanism that people are talking about to create secondary liquidity. But actually all of the tokenization to date, pretty much all tokenization to date, has been what's done in a format of what's known as a bearer instrument. So this juncture is a really, really important concept for the audience here to understand the difference between a registered security and a bearer security. So a bearer instrument or a bearer security is something which the bearer owns. So if I'm bearing it, for example, a 10 euro note or a $10 note, I'm holding it, I'm the bearer, I am the owner. I hand it to someone else, they are now the new owner of it. It's that simple. Whereas a registered asset or a registered security is where there is a central list, central register that details who owns what. Now, central registers are very important for certain types of assets. What most people in capital markets don't know is that in the early 1700s, when the first public shares were listed on the Amsterdam Exchange of Dutch East India Company, those were actually bearer instruments. They had a share certificate that was given to the investors, and it had no name printed on it. And if you held the share certificate, you owned the shares. So if you stole a share certificate from someone else, you were now the new owner of those shares. Sounds ridiculous. And it's for that reason that over the last 300 years, capital markets have moved away from bearer instruments to registered securities for those obvious security risks and impracticalities. However, tokenization to date across the world has approached the way of doing things as creating this security in this token, in this digital certificate, if you like, that can then be transferred to different people. And as soon as you transfer it to someone else's token wallet, they are now the new bearer of it, the new owner. And so it comes with all of those security risks that were present right back in the 1700s with the Dutch East India bearer securities, same thing. And so for that reason, in bearer security format, we will never see mass adoption of tokenized securities by large institutions across the world and by institutional capital markets. And that's why to date, really what we've seen in tokenized space has been focused on retail investors, particularly the younger generation who don't understand these risks to their full extent, and they don't have the background compliance and everything else that goes along with the institutional capital market space. So with all of that, you know, background now set, what's really important is the digitization of private markets end to end, which can allow for the very rapid and efficient transfer of assets in a secondary context. And that really means all of those components, like if you have an LP interest or unit in the fund that is transferring from one holder to another, then what do you need that holder to do? First of all, you need that exchange to happen. You need the cash transfer efficiently and so on. You need trust in that space. But then also you probably want that new investor in the fund, that new unit holder to sign up to a fund subscription agreement or whatever else is required. And so all of that process end to end being digitized, that's important. And that can be done without tokenization. Once that's done, once that's digital end to end, then we can actually use tokenization over the top as a representation mechanism. So not as the security itself, but as a mechanism by which two parties can use to do a transfer without having to rely on a custodian sitting in the middle to ensure that the cash gets delivered properly and everything else like that. So it can actually be a much more efficient transfer mechanism. It can also allow the holders of that token to be able to send that token to, you know, different pools of liquidity in situations where you know, it warrants it. So it is a really good mechanism when used in the right context, but it's really important to understand that actually to get mass adoption here, it needs to be done in the right way. And that is in a format in which there is everything underneath that has been digitized end to end. You can have all of the traditional processes that are involved in the transfer of someone's holdings in a fund. And then the token is just a representation over the top. So within that, it also doesn't need any additional regulatory context. So coming back to your question, Sylvia, I appreciate that was a lot of backstory there and context. But coming back to, you know, what's going to drive adoption in the European market and really globally, is when we see and we are just now starting to see the first real use cases of that digitization being in place underneath the hood, so that all of those processes involved in the legal title transfer can actually occur digitally and you know, automated, and then using tokenization over the top to allow for much more efficient communication, if you like, between the parties that triggers all of those digital processes in the back end to settle. And so we're just starting to see, you know, we are involved in some transactions and we are starting to see some in the market that are in that format. And that's when we can actually see institutional adoption from institutional asset managers and other large institutions and intermediaries. And once we have that, that's when we'll really start to see more takeoff. So it's something that's coming, but it's probably, you know, over the next 2 to 3 years, we really start to see that start to take hold.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what we're saying is, if I can paraphrase all of that, is that we're on a journey in terms of digitizing the entire process, the life cycle of funds. And until firms predominantly do that across the globe, then it's only then will we start to see tokenization being adopted worldwide, because there are still too many risks at the moment, as you mentioned at the beginning. I don't know if Jack, you would agree with all that, or what's your take on what Miles just said?
So I think what Miles actually pointed out is a very common problem in the industry, in tokenization, sort of this fact that even if you tokenize the asset, you have to run dual ledger. So you have to run one stack where the actual transfer of the title or the ownership or the shares happen, which can happen on a transfer agent, can happen at a CSD level. And then you have the token, which, it transfers on the blockchain level. So a common sort of counter-argument, that's a very common counter-argument against tokenization, saying that it's actually not that efficient, because now you have to add the additional blockchain layer. So I've mixed feeling about that point. I actually happen to think it depends. So if you just tokenize the asset and all you do is P2P or just simple transfer, I would agree that it's kind of reinventing the wheel and adding additional complexity on top. But if you're trying to replicate some logic, such as, maybe it's borrowing and lending, maybe it's repo, some kind of time-locked contract, using smart contracts, I think that is actually a very concrete added benefit. Because otherwise, in the traditional world, you would have to rely on manual initiation of transfer of funds or manual reconciliation, and also, to be honest, just trusting your counterparty, they will do what they say they do. But smart contracts can enable that. So I would say that's like a middle ground, and I would agree with Miles. I think bearer asset, we've been there historically. I don't think we're going to go back. There's obviously some funky aspect in some jurisdictions that allow pockets of certain asset classes to be bearer asset, but it's not scalable.
Okay, thank you. So we touched upon briefly the possibility for tokenization technology to help gain access to a new pool of investors or broaden the pool to individual investors. I wonder what the legal implications of that might be. Stephen, do you want to chip in on that?
Thanks, Sylvia. So for similar reasons that Mars and Jack just gave the uptake of tokenization generally, tokenization could help the retailization of funds, as it could potentially allow increased liquidity and accessibility, as tokens could be traded more easily in the secondary market. And tokenization could also help investors to hold fractional interest in funds, and so invested amounts and holding periods could be reduced. Tokenization potentially allow more operational efficiencies and automation, therefore reduce costs. The smart contracts could be embedded in tokens that, for instance, prevent them from being transferred to someone not eligible, for example, for regulatory purposes. And certain functions, such as payment of distributions, could be automated. And so tokenization could also allow increased transparency for the purpose of disclosure requirements, particularly for retail investors, for which that there are more heightened disclosure requirements and reporting requirements, as tokens could store additional information on a public ledger that might otherwise be unavailable with a traditional security, such as information on an investor's identity, for AML purposes, their percentage holding and rights and obligations, and also potentially information on ESG risks, which could help facilitate investor reporting under the European, UK, and other jurisdiction regulations on ESG reporting. And also, from a regulatory perspective, for funds subject to the new FCA consumer duty requirements, managers are required to enable retail investors to exit a product where they want to without unreasonable barriers or delay, and generally ensure fair value is provided. And so tokenization could potentially help compliance with these requirements if it reduces costs for transfers, and also if it reduces costs generally, because there is now an increased focus by the regulator on ensuring fair value, and particularly for retail investors.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You mentioned consumer duty there, which led me to think that there's also an education piece there probably for, but in the event that individual investors are able to gain access more to private markets, purely because those types of assets are less liquid, and you know, with consumer duty comes a responsibility to inform your investor of the type of asset that they're investing in. And I think that individual investors are less aware of private assets as an investment class because it's not usually available to them. So I think even though you've mentioned those points, we do need to consider the implications of accessing a wider pool of investors from an education perspective. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Sylvia. So there will have to be very clear disclosures on the risks involved with this sort of investment. And it would also have to go into not only how these private equity assets work, but also how the actual tokenization element works, so that investors can really understand the risks and really understand this new area.
Yeah, thank you. So speaking of risks, I think we should talk about them. So when we're thinking about tokenizing private assets, there are risks around hacking, but the potentials for hacking. And I wonder who would be responsible in the event of a hack, given the nature of the technology. I don't know if Miles, you'd be able to help explain that.
Sure. Well, this again is comes back to the point around bearer versus registered security. So if it's done as a registered security, which is the better way to do it, then actually it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter because the token itself is merely a representation of the holding. It doesn't form the legal holding itself. And so in that context, if there was some kind of data discrepancy, whether that's from a hack or whether that's some other kind of error that's occurred, then those tokens can simply be reformed based on the underlying register, the underlying, you know, what constitutes the legal holding itself. If, on the other hand, the tokens are they're bearer securities and they're done in the format that the crypto is today, and the way that most security tokenizations in their trial sense have been done to date, then that's a problem. Then if there is a hack and those tokens get stolen, then of course that's just the same as if someone were to have stolen those share certificates of the Dutch East India companies in the early 1700s.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Jack, are there any other risks that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so from my perspective, I happen to think is technology a risk, but it's actually overrated. So the reason why, now we go back to the bearer versus registrar asset, right? So in the worst case scenario, the tokens might be hacked, which, by the way, can actually be mitigated if, you know, depending on who holds what token and the wallet structure and the a lot of operational processes can mitigate those. But even in worst case scenario, hackers get hold of those tokens, well, those tokens are, they don't mean anything. Because ultimately you still need the registrar to update the ownership. Now it's going to be a terrible business practice, right? And we should not let any hacks happen. But I would say this risk is overrated or over-discussed. I happen to think in a piece of the burden or the bottleneck for tokenization adoption is really thinking, how are we going to get users to use blockchain use tokenized asset to solve a particular pain point. Now, our audience here are, you know, mid-market GPs, which they sit on both sides of the equation. They are the issuers of fund shares. They are the sellers, they're the sell side to their LP investors, but they are also the buy side of the underlying assets that they invest, right? Whether it is a mid-market infrastructure fund, well, the GPs are investors in infrastructure assets. And so I think it's a very interesting perspective. And my vantage point is, I think there is, from a buy-side perspective, there isn't much difference between tokenized asset or non-tokenized asset. Whether a bond is tokenized or not, it shouldn't affect, at this current stage, it shouldn't affect the underlying risk and return. It's the same corporate issuer, it's the same risk. However, as things scale, I think there's a lot of added benefits of using this technology. The fact that counterparty risk can be reduced, the fact that, and that might factor in into the underlying risk and return of the asset. The fact that collateral movement and a lot of new composable financial instruments that can lead to capital efficiency, those might add to the return of the underlying asset in a tokenized format. So to get there, I think we need to focus on like what's missing. How can we bridge asset managers to allow them to trade, to buy, to hold, sell tokenized asset, ideally in a seamless format? And my conviction, my thesis, observation is there's a lot of technology and operational hurdle for the buy side to interact with tokenized asset. The fact that the buy side, you know, relies on the same sets of front to back setup for the past 10, 15 years hasn't really changed. You know, many of them don't even have API connectivity. So that's something that I think we should focus on, and we'd love to hear what your listeners think as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I wonder if Mars, you can talk a little bit about how GlobalCap can help fund managers on the journey to creating digital assets.
Sure. Well, what GlobalCap does is really digitize the workflow end to end of the private markets journey itself. So again, a step before the tokenization piece, all of the aspects that go into that private markets journey, such as documents execution and signatures on pieces of paper, the being able to, you know, if we're talking about a secondary event, for example, where Sylvia, you're transferring a fund unit to Stephen or Jack or myself, then you know, you don't want to hand over, you don't want to sign a piece of paper saying that you officially hand over legal title until you know that you're receiving the cash. And similarly, Jack, myself, or Stephen, we don't want to hand over the cash until we know that we're definitely getting that title transfer. And so, you know, public markets, central securities depository perform that function. Private markets, there is no one that does that function. And so there's that trust issue. And usually you pay expensive advisors to be able to do that, but that makes things very slow and also very expensive. So one thing that the GlobalCap platform does is fulfill that component. It makes all of that automated, it makes it all digital, makes all the subscription documents digital and automated and execute straight away. It gives the interaction of all of the participants, all of the background, KYC suitability, all that kind of stuff, as well as in private placement in the primary issuance side as well. And so once that's in place, then, you know, tokenization can be laid over the top if needed. But again, that's not always needed. And so I think that's the quick background on GlobalCap. Happy to, you know, talk about why tokenization might be useful for mid-market PE firms and what they might be able to get out of it and when it's not appropriate, if that would help.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So it's important to note that, you know, if for example, a PE manager is trying to attract a younger audience and even an existing audience demographic, but with the prospect of facilitating secondary liquidity throughout the journey of the fund, tokenization really comes into its own when there is a continuous trading event. So in other words, when for a period of time, It could be just a limited period or it could be ongoing. There is continuous trading, there's continuous buying and selling, more like a public exchange or public listing. That doesn't suit all assets. In fact, it doesn't suit 99% of the assets in the world. It really only suits the very largest securities and assets out there. And so more applicable is for a mid-market PE manager to be able to do a liquidity event at an interval that suits them. And that could be once a year, it could be once every 3 years, it could be once a quarter, whatever is relevant for the particular funds and the particular underlying assets and so on. And so that funnels all of that buy and sell demand, all of that liquidity into one point in time, which allows all of those investors to get the best possible execution because you've got all of that funneled into the one point. And it also gives the lowest overhead onto the fund itself to be able to facilitate that point of liquidity. And so do you need tokenization to be able to do that? You don't. Our platform could do that. There are other platforms now that can facilitate that kind of event. From my perspective, tokenization is really useful for an asset where for a period of time there might be more continuous trading. And for those assets, the much larger assets that have much deeper pools of liquidity or investors in it, for a limited period, you could have tokened issued, and that can allow those investors to be able to transact freely amongst themselves in some kind of exchange or marketplace. And that tokenization overlay can allow a big efficiency gain when that happens. But I think there are specific use cases when that's best and when that's not best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. That's really helpful to clarify. Hopefully that helps our listeners understand a bit more about when it's best to use tokenization and when it's best to avoid it. I think we've pretty much covered everything, but I'll round things up with Stephen with some comments on what's to come with any legal developments in the UK around tokenization.
Thanks, Sylvia. So while the FCA is technology neutral and has the mantra, same risk, same regulations, it is key to promote innovation. And the UK government announced last year plans to become a global hub for crypto asset technology and investments, creating a new regulatory framework for crypto asset businesses. And so there could be changes to UK regulatory regime as it applies to tokenized funds. And while the UK government's initial priority is regulating stablecoins used for payments, which it believes the risks and opportunities are most urgent, it has just confirmed actually this week it's proposed next steps for the regulation of other crypto assets. And so it intends to create a new regulated regime for crypto assets, although while it generally expects a continuation of the current treatment of crypto assets as security tokens already qualifying as specified investments, which would include tokenized fund interest, it has just confirmed that the custody of security tokens will be regulated differently to other specified investments. So different regulatory requirements would apply to the custody of tokenized fund interest as opposed to the custody of traditional fund interest. And as to a specific framework for tokenized funds, as you mentioned, Sylvia, the FCA announced on Wednesday that it's partnering with regulators across the world as part of the Monetary Authority of Singapore's Project Guardian, which is a collaborative initiative with the financial industry that explores fund and asset tokenization use cases and decentralized finance generally. And that aims to share knowledge and examine the benefits, regulatory challenges, and commercial use cases of asset and fund tokenization. And also further to the UK Investment Association, having called for the FCA to create a framework to support tokenized funds, the FCA also published a discussion paper in February on improving the UK asset management regime, in which it dedicated a whole section to fund tokenization. And the FCA is seeking to understand the benefits of tokenized units and authorized funds for investors, what regulatory changes are needed to enable tokenized units to be issued, and the priority it should put on enabling the tokenization of units, as it's unclear on the level of interest. And it does acknowledge the potential efficiencies of issuing fund units via distributed ledger, which becomes then the primary mutable ledger of ownership including cost savings, speedier transactions, and fewer administrative errors. And it also acknowledges that current rules governing how units are created, transferred, registered, and cancelled might not be flexible enough to allow firms to operate a blockchain register. And it has stated that it's open to exploring what would need to be done to enable this, and that it would need to consider specific new risks, such as in relation to operational resilience. And the FCA has said that work is already underway on this, and that the level of priority assigned to tokenization will determine when it might consult general changes. And so it should be publishing a feedback statement quite shortly. Depending on the responses, the FCA will then consider whether rule changes are needed.
Thank you. Yeah, so there clearly are some developments. Just to be clear, because this isn't live, we're talking about the FCA joining Project Guardian on Wednesday, the 1st of November. But yes, thank you. Yeah, so we'll look forward to see any developments that the FCA publishes in due course. And for the listeners, I hope this has helped to grasp the concept of digital assets better and has got you thinking about the uses of tokenization within private equity. Until next time on Private Equity Talks.